So, one day you're working away in your law firm's busy litigation team. A paralegal, not a solicitor, hits submit on a claim form via Money Claims Online. And suddenly, a £50,000 case hangs on whether they just committed a crime. Welcome to my latest podcast, where I'm discussing the legal puzzle at the heart of Silex and others, V. Mazer and others. Today we're into the Court of Appeal judgment that redefines who may lawfully conduct litigation in England and Wales. We'll crack open the meaning of carrying on the conduct of litigation under the Legal Services Act and examine how supervision, delegation, and responsibility collide. Sound technical? Here's an example. Think of reserved legal activity like holding the car keys to the justice system. You need a license. Authorised individual means you're certified to drive. But what if you let your trainee steer while you watch? We're going to look at the legal history, dissect this judgment and unpack its real-world impact and those fighting for access to justice. Is supervised delegation a criminal offence or just the engine room of modern legal practice? Let's get started. To understand this case, let's decode the Legal Services Act. It's like a constitution for legal work defining who can do what. At its core is the idea of reserved legal activities, tasks so important only specially authorised people or entities can perform them. Why such strict boundaries? The Act's regulatory objectives are a roadmap, public interest, access to justice, consumer protection. Authorised person is a status, not a badge you pin on. It's earned, monitored, and can't be borrowed. But here's the technical dilemma. Does conducting litigation mean the person physically pressing the button, or the one who holds ultimate responsibility? The Act doesn't spell it out clearly, which is why this case matters. Think of it like a pilot and co-pilot in the cockpit. If the co-pilot lands the plane under the captain's watchful eye, who is truly in control? This ambiguity has fueled decades of debate. So, as we move forward, keep in mind that the Legal Services Act isn't just a list of do's and don'ts. It's the frame through which the court had to interpret responsibility, performance, and legality. Let's take a step back. Delegation in legal practice is nothing new. Picture Victorian solicitors surrounded by clerks running errands, drafting paperwork, ferrying documents to the courts, none of them formally qualified, yet all essential to the machinery. Landmark cases like Waterlow Bros and Leighton clarified that delegation was fine so long as the solicitor remained in charge. Competent agent wasn't just a buzzword, it was a lifeline for busy legal businesses. So, what's changed? Not much, structurally. Even today, managing clerks that evolved into legal executives, paralegals and trainees carry out key litigation tasks. The core issue is whether this time-honoured model sails close to the edge of criminality under modern statutes. It's like a relay race. The baton pass is legal, but who gets the medal? The answer has always been the principal who supervises, not the assistant who runs. Now, with the Legal Services Act in play, the challenge is drawing the line between permissible support and unlawful conduct. And as we'll see, the courts have wrestled with this for over a century. Let's put faces to this dispute. Julia Mazur and Jerome Stewart refused to pay their law firm, CRS, over £50,000. To recover the fees, CRS hires GBS, another law firm. A senior litigation executive, Mr. Middleton, who isn't a solicitor, files a claim via the court's online system. Mazur and Stewart spot the issue. Middleton lacks a practicing certificate. Their argument? The claim is a nullity. Only an authorised individual can conduct litigation. The statute makes it a criminal offence otherwise. GBS counters. Middleton's actions were fully supervised by Mr. Ashall, a practicing solicitor. This, they argue, is common practice in debt recovery clerks issue claims every day. Now, you might ask, is it really that simple? If the system relies on experienced clerks, is everyone breaking the law? Or is the law out of step with reality? The Court of Appeal had to decide whether supervised delegation crossed the red line. This scenario encapsulates the tension, efficiency versus strict statutory compliance. And the answer, at least until this appeal, was a resounding no from the lower courts. Here's where legal heavyweights clashed. Silex, APIL, and the Law Centres Network lined up against the Law Society, SRA, and the LSB. The battleground. Does carrying on the conduct of litigation mean doing the acts or being responsible for them? Silex argued that performance and responsibility are two sides of the coin. Supervised staff can perform litigation acts so long as the authorised person takes the heat if anything goes wrong. The Law Society and SRA, in contrast, drew a hard line. You can support, but you can't conduct under supervision unless you're fully authorised. They pointed to the lack of an explicit exemption for litigation in the Act's schedule, unlike other reserved legal activities. It's like letting someone drive your car. If you're in the passenger seat, fine for some tasks, not if you're heading onto the motorway. APIL and the LCN highlighted real-world consequences, efficiency, costs, and access to justice. The SRA, ever the regulator, warned about safeguarding the public and the profession's reputation. So, who wins? The practical needs of the sector or a literal reading of the statute? The Court of Appeal had to break the deadlock. Let's explore the judge's reasoning. They began with statutory construction. What do the words mean in their full context? The 2007 Act's purpose, they noted, was to balance regulation, professionalism, and access. The court concluded that conduct of litigation refers to the actual acts issuing proceedings. Serving documents while carry-on is about directing, controlling, and being responsible. So it's not just who pushes the button, but who owns the outcome. To use an analogy, if a chef supervises a line cook preparing a dish, the chef is still responsible for the meal going out right. Similarly, an authorised individual retains legal responsibility for the litigation tasks delegated to their staff. The court rejected the idea that the phrase carrying on simply means doing. It brings with it the weight of accountability, the very thing regulators want to see in professional practice. This interpretation, the judges said, aligns with both historical practice and the statute's objectives. The result? Supervised delegation is lawful as long as the authorised person actually supervises and retains control. But what acts are truly conducting litigation? The court explained, tasks like issuing proceedings, serving essential documents, and filing pleadings clearly fall within the definition. But purely mechanical or administrative tasks, think mailing a letter or data entry, are outside. Here's where the fact and degree test emerges. The court looked to cases like Ndole and Baxter, which distinguished between those who assume responsibility for litigation versus those who simply perform menial tasks. Still, the judges resisted making a checklist. Why? Litigation is dynamic. What's a routine act in a debt case might be pivotal in another context. The key is whether the unauthorised person is acting as the principal or merely on behalf of one. To put it another way, if the unauthorised person is the face and decision maker, they're on the wrong side of the line. If they're acting under supervision, with the authorised person keeping oversight, they're safe. So next time you're sorting out roles in a legal team, ask, who's really carrying on the hand that acts or the mind that directs? Law Centres stood at the heart of this appeal. Their model relies on small teams of solicitors delegating to unauthorised caseworkers who handle large caseloads under supervision. The 2007 Act, they feared, could outlaw this approach. The court found otherwise. As long as authorised individuals retain and exercise responsibility through meetings, reviews, and active supervision, the delegation is permissible. The system isn't broken, provided oversight is real, not just on paper. This is crucial for access to justice. Law centres would be paralysed if every case had to be handled directly by a solicitor. Instead, the court recognised the necessity and lawfulness of well-managed, supervised delegation. Think of it as a ship's captain and crew. The captain can delegate, but can't disappear. The court's ruling preserves the model, provided the captain's hand remains on the tiller. For those working in or using law centres, this is a green light to innovate within the boundaries of genuine supervision and accountability. You might be wondering, how did regulators react? The answer scramble. The judgment forced the SRA, LSB and others to revisit and clarify guidance. The LSB's interim report found inconsistent advice and uncertainty about who was doing what across the sector. Why does this matter? Because ambiguity leads to risk aversion, inefficiency and possibly injustice. For years, many believed they were acting lawfully, only to discover they might have crossed the line. The court's decision restores equilibrium. Supervised delegation is legal, but not a free-for-all. Regulators are now tasked with setting clear, practical standards for supervision and responsibility. In technical terms, The regulated person definition brings even unauthorized staff into the oversight of regulators, but doesn't grant them the right to conduct litigation unsupervised. It's a patchwork, but one that must now be stitched together with fresh guidance. So, if you're heading up a legal practice, it's time to check your internal systems, update your policies, and ensure everyone knows where the lines and the responsibilities are drawn. I'll be following this up in the coming weeks. Let's wrap up. What are the three key takeaways from Silex and others, V. Mazur and others? First, the court confirmed that supervised delegation of litigation tasks is lawful provided the authorised individual retains real responsibility. Second, the meaning of conducting litigation hinges on both performance and direction. Think of it as the difference between steering the ship and charting its course. Third, clarity in internal processes and regulatory guidance is essential for compliance and peace of mind. So, your concrete action step, review your firm's or organization's delegation and supervision arrangements now. Make sure supervision isn't just a tick box exercise. It's live, active, and documented. As we look ahead, the sector faces a new challenge. Will Parliament or regulators revisit these boundaries, or will case law continue to shape the practice? If you found this episode valuable, share it with your colleagues, subscribe for updates, and send in your questions and comments. For now, remember, in the world of litigation, responsibility and supervision are the true keys to the kingdom, no matter who presses submit. Thanks for listening.